Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:35 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is March 9th. Now, I thought we'd kick off with M2 year over year. It's down 1.7%. So, it's the first time in history that M2 has been negative. And I think it sends a very clear signal that all that money that was added to the system, that it's not just about that the growth rate is going down, that they're actually removing it. And this is one of the central subjects we talk about at the chart seminar. There's really only two subjects in markets. One is money supply, and the second is human psychology. And I think it's a truism, but it does bear repeating, that it's easier to make money in a bull market, and it's harder in a bear market. And how do we define a bull market? Well, we can think about it in terms of investor psychology, but one thing for certain is that when the supply of money is increasing, it's a lot easier to make money. And this is the first time in history that they're actually removing money from the system. So the supply of cash isn't just growing at a slower level, it's actually going down. Now, when we think about that in terms of the Fed's balance sheet, well, they are contracting it just like they did in 2018 and 19, except that the pace of the contraction now is twice as fast. It was at 9 trillion about this time last year, and now it's at about 8.34. So that's a significant contraction, and it means that they're siphoning money out of the system. So, one thing that has clearly stood out, and it is a mitigating factor, is that leveraged loans were mostly refinanced during this period when money supply growth accelerated, and that pushed out maturities. So, the head of capital markets or debt capital markets at JP Morgan cited the statistic of 80% of outstanding leverage loans have maturities beyond 2026. So we can pretty much then, I think, conclude that that is not going to be where the focus of selling pressure is going to be. The vast majority of companies can make coupon payments. The real problems for companies when it comes to debt is refinancing, because they have to either pay back the full sum at maturity, or they have to refinance it, and then it's about interest costs. And of course, interest rates have gone up significantly. And then we can also think about the fact that the high yield spread has been really well contained, and it got up to about 600 basis points in the middle of last year, and then it contracted. And usually, major lows in the market coincide with trips to about 1,000 basis points on the high yield spread, and we didn't get that. So there were two ways of thinking about that. Either the problem wasn't that big, or the problem was in the future. Well, I think anyone who's been listening to these broadcasts over the last year knows that I've been of the view that the problem is in the future, and we're likely to see yield spreads blow out. Now, when we then think about, well, what's next? Well, the other important factor was that banks were holding up really quite well. But that does now look like it's changing, and the S&P 500 banks index has pulled back in a really dynamic manner in here this week. So I think it's important to highlight some of those banks. JP Morgan has this specter of the US Virgin Islands asking for the details of Jamie Dimon's travel, and that is obviously even having your name mentioned in the same sentence as Jeffrey Epstein is obviously not going to be good for public, or I guess the impression of how people view bankers. But JP Morgan is down in a really dynamic manner in here this week. So this is capping the rebound that we had from the lows in October, and it's a peak of at least near-term significance. Now, I saw an interview with the CEO of Bank of America on Bloomberg this morning. He's talking about not cutting headcount, that they're allowing attrition to be their friend, and that they're still seeing the business growing. But the share is right back on its lows, and we have a preponderance of downward dynamics within this range. So, and more importantly, we also continue to see resistance being found in the region of the 200-day moving average. So, this continues to look like a downtrend. And then these are money center banks. So Citigroup didn't really rally as impressively, but it's certainly pulling back in here this week. And Wells Fargo has been benighted with news stories about how they rip off their customers. And the share is also down in a really dynamic manner in here as well. This looks like a massive reaction against the prevailing trend with a period of right-hand extension, and that's a type 2 topping completion characteristic. So I think we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. But when banks, as liquidity providers, are doing badly, then that is not good news for the wider market. Now, I've often regarded Bitcoin as a liquidity barometer, and it's down $1,000 in here today. So now it has taken out the higher low, and we are pulling down into this underlying range. Now, when we look at Bitcoin on a weekly basis, then it's below the 1,000-day moving average, and that's not good. It's certainly something that hasn't really happened before. So on every occasion that it pulled back in the past, it came back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but then was able to rally back above it in quite impressive fashion. Well, on this occasion, that's just not happening. So I think th this is important, that it's a clear change. And this does beg the question, are we in an environment where liquidity is something that's going to fuel asset prices, or are we in an environment where the absence of liquidity is going to be a headwind to asset prices? And I think it is the latter, because Bitcoin has been ranging below the 1,000-day moving average for 6 months. Now, arguably, it did the same thing in early 2019, and then it popped on the upside. But we certainly need to see that pop on the upside if we're to give the benefit of the doubt to the ups to give out to a recovery. Now, when we think about the 10-year yield, well, it's hovering here around 4%, and jobless rates came in marginally ahead of expectations in here today, but certainly not surging higher. And the unemployment rate is still very low. Now, I think it's important to highlight that the JOLTS index is a very small sample size. So putting too much credence on the number of jobs that are available would appear to be, I think, a rather silly thing to do. What we can think about, though, is that we've been in a tight liquidity environment now for about a year, and the effects of successive interest rate hikes are cumulative, and they're starting to be affected. They are starting to affect the banking sector, so that's not good news. Then we can think about some of these liquidity-dependent companies. So Tesla is down nearly $5 again in here today and continues to pull back from the region of the 200-day moving average. And now it's back below the 1,000-day moving average. But more importantly than that, it's that we had this huge rally from 100 to over 200, And now that short-term overbought condition is being unwound, and it could easily pull back. And it could drop at, well, are really quite close to 100, and even then that would be a higher reaction low. But one problem for Tesla right now is that the steering wheels are falling off of cars, and that's not good news. And the build quality of their vehicles, it has been questionable for quite a while, but now it's starting to come back and bite them. And the big question, of course, is how much of the company is hype and how much of it is truly valuable. And it's still trading at an estimated PE of 44. So, I mean, let's just think about what that actually means. It means that it would take 44 years to buy the price at today's earnings. And obviously, people have been willing to buy it because they thought that those earnings would grow much quicker. But if earnings don't grow quicker, well, you're going to be waiting a long time for earnings to improve enough to justify the price, such as it is right now. Now, when we think about the wider environment here, well, we know that we've had this very rich liquidity environment for a decade, and now it's over, or at least it's over for now. And the S&P 500, having rebounded impressively from the low in October and breaking the sequence of lower rally highs, is now pulling back down through the 200-day moving average. Now, from another perspective, with this kind of equity weakness and the weak action that we're seeing in the banking sector, and the fact that we are in a more tight liquidity condition environment, well, then that is accelerating the potential that we're coming closer to the next interest rate cut. Excuse me. Sorry, I'd had to sneeze. So the dollar index is down a tad in here today. Now, Kuroda is giving his last speech at the Bank of Japan as I speak, but the yen is beginning to strengthen again in here. So I think investors are beginning to price in the potential, at least, that Japan might try something different with a new central bank administration. I think seeing is believing on that front. But with even a sniff of potential that interest rate cuts are more likely, then gold is steadying here around the $1,800 level, and it was up $17 in here today. And silver is also just beginning to steady. But it really does need an upward dynamic to confirm support here around the psychological $20 level. Now, there was news also today that smelters in China are looking to sell more copper. So that would suggest that there is less domestic demand, and that's helping to put a lid on enthusiasm for copper prices. And then let's also just pay attention to what's happening with the oil price. So Brent crude was down another dollar in here today. So we had the downside Q reversal 3 days ago, and then follow through on subsequent days. Now, we can definitely also say that a triangular pattern has been forming over the last 6 weeks, where we have this very short-term incremental sequence of lower highs and higher lows. So I remain very much of the view that when the break comes, it's going to be dynamic. And we're still in an environment where we have a backwardation, and it's a fairly steep backwardation. Between May of 23 and March of 24, there's a $4 difference, or almost $4 difference. So that at least suggests to me that there's still excess demand in the short term, but the price action is still in a very tight range, when that breakout comes, it's going to be really dynamic. Now, let's also think about how those energy companies are doing. And we've had a really phenomenally impressive advance. And now the S&P 500 Energy Index is coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average. Energy was the best performing sector for 2 years in a row. So now the question is, I think for many investors, is it capable of putting in a third year? And if it is, then this support that we're seeing in the last 2 weeks is going to hold. And the impending breakout on oil prices will be on the upside. But at least we're coming down right now. And the banking sector rolling over, to me at least, suggests that we have to be prepared for slower economic growth. And if we've got slower economic growth, that means less oil demand. So there's certainly the potential that we'll have some rebalancing going on. Now, when we look at natural gas, the European natural gas price was up a couple of percent in here today, and it's really very oversold. Whereas US natural gas, having popped on the upside in late February, was still pulling back in here today, down 3 cents. I still think that we're very close to a low, but golly, it's volatile. And when we look at this on a longer term chart, well, we can see just how deep that oversold condition is. But it does come down to global growth. And with those banks pulling back, I think that there's clear scope here that the US growth story is not going to fire as impressively as it has. Now, let's contrast that with what we're seeing in Europe. The European banking sector has rebounded impressively. The Euro Stoxx index is short-term overbought, so I think it would be quite likely that we're going to see at least some pause and consolidation here, and potentially a reversion back down towards the 200-day moving average. And the FTSE 250 is right at that moving average, so this is would be really an ideal place where support should start to come back in. And the FTSE 100, having popped up to new all-time highs, does look likely to unwind the short-term overbought condition. The Nifty index in India is rolling over, and it looks likely that we're going to get some additional unwinding of the short-term overbought condition. Now, when we think here about India, well, it does have growth, but it has a PE of over 20, and there aren't really that many markets out there that have the full market has a PE of 20. So India is trading on a rich valuation, and investors have been willing to give it the benefit of the doubt because it was one of the fastest growing economies in the world over the last few years. Now the big question is, are they going to be able to sustain that growth, keep inflation under control, and support the currency? In an environment where the global economy is rolling over. And then the H share index, having rebounded impressively following the announcement of the end of the COVID zero policy, is now pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, when we think about banks generally, European banks have really not exhibited a lot of strain. So HSBC, for example, had rebounded very impressively. Now, I think it is very likely that it's going to unwind this short-term overbought condition, and it could easily pull back by about 10%. But then let's think about ICBC, for example, in Hong Kong. So when we think then about the recovery in China, well, the banking sector didn't really take part. and it's still hovering here. And we've had some exceptionally volatile trading over the last couple of weeks, where it was up one the week, down the next, and then with big tails on the candles over the last 3 days. It suggests there's a lot of indecision going on. And then a number of the Chinese shares were among the leading decliners on Wall Street today, particularly Pinduoduo, which has the leading e-commerce app right now. Of course, there was news that internet connections or wires for outlying Taiwanese islands were severed over the last 48 hours. Now, that hasn't really affected the Taiwanese market, and the index was pretty steady in here today. But I think we definitely need to pay attention to how banking sectors are performing globally, with the US money center banks starting to underperform in a rather big way here. And I think the clear takeaway is that it is Chinese banks are the emerging market risk point, and then the kinds of banks that rely on Chinese money, like Singaporean banks, are also exhibiting some weakness. So DBS is pulling back into the region of the 200-day moving average, but that was a rather large downside weekly key reversal 4 weeks ago. And the broad Singapore Straits Times Index has been ranging for a decade, and it's coming down now from the upper side of that range. So we can look, for example, at the positive governance and reforms that have been introduced in countries like Indonesia. And the JCI has popped up over the last year. It's at new highs, and it spent a long time messing around between the peak in 2017 and when it was able to push on the upside. But then let's also just look at the performance of a US dollar denominated asset, and it's rolling over, and instead of having a broad uptrend, it has a broad downtrend. And that is despite the fact that the Indonesian rupiah was quite steady all the way through 2020 and 2021. But of course, the problem right now is that it is devaluing, and that is sapping interest in some of these markets. So we're likely to have some unwinding of risk. Now, there are strong fundamentals in several emerging market currency countries, and we still have the rise of the global consumer, and at least another billion people will be added to the global economy as active participants and consumers over the next decade and 2 decades. But with the US now starting to slow down, and with banks rolling over and tighter liquidity conditions, this does feel like a time to trim one's sails. We've had a really impressive rebound since the low in October, and it's looking increasingly likely that it is over. And now the big question is, where will support start to come back in? Now, ideally, that would happen in and put in higher reaction lows, and then we'll start to see monetary conditions easing, but we're not quite there yet. I think that we have to be prepared for higher unemployment and for inflationary pressures to surprise on the downside, and that tighter monetary conditions will contribute to inflation coming in hard, and then people being much more worried about deflation than inflation, because that is exactly what we've seen every time they've tried to reduce the size of the balance sheets. And then we'll start to see easier monetary conditions and a a real recovery, a recovery that can last a couple of years, starting to take place. And there will be some exceptionally attractive buying opportunities. So I think that is something that we can look forward to. But I don't think it's a time for loading up on risk at the present moment. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.